Hi, Neil Warren here again, and welcome to another episode of the Happy Hour Harmonica Podcast, with more interviews with some of the finest harmonica players around today. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and also check out the Spotify playlist, where some of the tracks discussed during the interviews can be heard. A quick word from my sponsor now, the Lone Wolf Blues Company, makers of effects pedals, microphones and more, designed for harmonica. Remember, when you want control over your tone, you want Lone Wolf.
Steve West Weston is the man in the hot seat in episode 2. Steve grew up among the vibrant music scene in Essex, listening to Dr. Feelgood amongst others. He started out playing in various bands on keyboard before finding his harmonica mojo as the frontman in West Weston and the Bluesonics, and he hasn't looked back since. Steve has become the harmonica player of choice for Mud Morganfield when he's touring Europe, as well as playing with Trickbag in Scandinavia, and then playing on a number one album with Wilco Johnson and Roger Daltrey, no less.
Hello, thank you. Welcome to Steve West Weston to the podcast. So, hi, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
Thanks very much for talking to me. And you live in Essexshire, is it in Southend you live?
Well, I live in Leigh-on-Sea now, but I've always been an Essex guy. I was born in Benfleet, South Benfleet, and then when I was 10, I moved to Canvey Island and stayed there until I was about 17 or 18. I left home, went to Croydon, finished my apprenticeship as an engineer up there, and then moved back down again and sort of lived in Southend and the Leigh area ever since.
Did you grow up on playing the harmonica around there? Was there any particular scene, or did you go
to do that? Yeah. No, there was a massive scene because when I was at school, kind of a few years ahead of me was all the Dr. Feelgood guys, which were Canvey boys, and when I at school I saw them on a program called the Geordie Scene on TV. And I can remember just thinking, this is everything I love about music. I've mucked around on the piano since I was a kid, not having any lessons, but it was just in the 60s, every British house had a piano, more or less, you know, they were just always part of the furniture.
You played piano with the Big Town Playboys.
Yeah, I did. I played in a band called Rent Party for years, South End band, Jump Jive band.
Were you playing harmonica then as well?
I did towards the end of my time there. I was 5 or 6 years with them.
And you started more as a piano player, though.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I was completely self-taught. I mean, totally. Can't really know music. So I was playing in the playground, in a school room with the windows open in the junior school playground. And I would have been 10 then, I guess, 9 or 10. Really basic kind of stuff, thumping around in a kind of a rock and roll way that a 10-year-old might do. And all my mates dancing in the playground to it. It was quite bizarre when I look back, you know. I started on the piano.
And so when did you pick up the harmonica? Was it later?
I'm trying to remember, I must have been about 13, 14. My dad bought, we got a record player. We never had a record player, but someone gave me a record player. And my dad said, I'll go and buy some records. So he went to Woolworths and he bought 4 or 5 LPs. And I can remember they were 50p each. One was a reggae one. I love that one. One was by 10.7. One was Boogie Woogie Explosions by a bloke called Precious Clement Turner. Boogie Woogie piano player. I learned most of my piano playing off of that record. And This Is the Blues, which had various artists on it. It had Muddy Waters on there, Sonny Boy with Junior Wells was on there. Loved it. absolutely loved it.
So Woolworths was the source of all your musical influences then?
Well, yeah, the rotary rack with the 50p bargains on, you know, yeah. And he went there. But I had an interest in the harmonica before that. I'd heard it on the television. I heard two things that I just loved the sound of it. One was Hard Day's Night when John Lennon was playing I Should Have Known Better on the train. And the other one was actually a guy I've caught, and I've sort of researched it later in life. Robert McClung was his name, and he was a Hollywood harmonica player, played in Hollywood films. And he was in a 1936 film called Pigskin Parade with Judy Garland. And he had a bit part in it, and he was just this country yokel bumpkin who played harmonica, and it's proper sort of Fox Chase harmonica.
Yeah.
And I saw it in the, you know, on a black and white TV, black and white film, saw it on a black and white telly, and just remembering thinking, what the hell was that all about? I love it. I love that. I really loved it. So I got, after that, and all those influences, then we got this record, and I thought, yeah, this is something I really want to get the hang of, and I got my dad to buy me a harmonica for a Christmas present, I think. But I got a chromatic. I thought I wanted a chromatic because I knew nothing about it.
Is that the first harmonica you got was a chromatic?
Yeah,
then, was
a chromatic.
Oh.
Yeah, just a regular 12-hole chromatic in C.
I
just assumed that the button would give you the blues notes. You know, you press it in if you wanted to be bluesy.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. So I spent a long time trying to play these bits on records and thinking it doesn't sound anything like this thing on the record player. It just doesn't sound the same at all.
Okay, so you had a chromatic for quite a while, and so that's...
I did for a couple of years. So I guess I took 2 or 3 years. Lots of really... I remember really sore lips with it, really hurting my lips, and just not understanding why it wouldn't do... Why it sounded so completely different to this, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously you do play chromatic now. Did that help you develop, and did you carry on playing chromatic for that time, or did you go back to it as a blues thing later?
I went much later. Yeah, so I gave up on, you know, I just sort of kind of given up on it. And then I know I was, must have been 17, and I was in Southend, and just in Hodges and Johnson's, the local music shop at the time, and in a harmonica case, there was one, and it just said blues harp written on it. And I just thought, that's got to be the one, you know. And I bought it. I bought one. It was in E, a ridiculously high thing, and loved it. And it just fell into place.
Your first one, diatonic, was an E, was it?
Yeah, it was an E one. I remember it being an E.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about anything, you know.
You
wouldn't
have found too many songs to play along with that.
No, but I just played along by myself on that, you know, and I just thought, I'm breathing in and breathing out, and it's making chords, and it's sounding like a train, you know.
Yeah, well, you had a tough start, because you started playing on a chromatic, hoping to play a bluesy diatonic and then you had an E diatonic, so adversity to get to where you are.
Yeah, so it was fantastic, you know. And then, you know, also the Phil Crislibri love playing harmonica. There's a local other guy, Lou Lewis, was playing harmonica. We, you know, once we were old enough to go out watching these bands, you know, massive fans of them, and it really big influence.
So you had a really good scene around Essex at that time.
It was every single night. I mean, sadly, I at 17, I went to Croydon to finish my apprenticeship. So I was on my own in London for 2 years, finishing off this apprenticeship. All my pals were back here in Southend, you know, having a great time, because it was around, you know, 76, 77. I loved. I've got an older brother as well. He's 13 years older, and he was 13 years older. So you really, when you're much, much younger, you really look up to the, you know, your older siblings. And he loved Georgie Fame and Duke Money and all these guys. And I loved that music. I really loved it.
It sounds like you've got quite a wide variety of influences, though. You certainly weren't bedded in the usual Little Walter, Sonny Boy. Yeah, it's roots stuff, but it wasn't
traditional
blues harmonica stuff. Did you go through a phase of the more traditional blues harmonica, you know, 1950s type stuff?
Well, back in the motorbike days, you know, we used to just go in, you know, at 17. I was a young looking 17. I used to get thrown out of pubs when I was 21, you know, for not being old enough. So I was never really on the pub scene with my pals because I just looked too young.
Yeah, you still look 21 now, so that's an advantage.
60 years old, yeah, it's gone so really quick. That time I got a proper job. My parents were particularly old, so they never really had any like record collections. But other friends at school, they had uncles and dads that like grew up with the Rolling Stones and things. And I can remember around my pal's house, and there was blues albums there, and we used to go through them and play them, you know, to see what it was all about. And we played a compilation, and I had my blues compilation bit as well, that This Is the Blues, and we looked at these people, listened to these people, and Muddy Waters came up, you know, and I can't even remember what songs were on it, probably Hoochie Coochie Man or some sort of classic one on these compilations.
The gypsy woman told my mother before I was born, you got a boy child coming.
And we loved it. You know, absolutely loved it.
Yeah,
and
who'd have known back then you'd be playing with his son in years to come, Walter. But yeah.
Well, I mean, the story about that is that he 17. He got his car. I had a bike. He got a car license. So his dad would lend him the car. It's my pal Paul Jones. We were pals for lots of years. And he said, "Do you fancy you saw any NME?" That Muddy Waters was playing in London. He was playing the New Victoria Theatre in 1976, I think it was. Might be 1977, I think it was. And he said, "Fancy going seeing him?" I said, "Wow, yeah. Well, we're God, what? That's great." So, you know, he bought tickets. We went up, and his dad, Mark II, called Tina. He took it up there, parked out. We went this New Vic, and of course, band come out, and we didn't have a clue what he looked like because we only had a record. There's no picture of him, so we looked at, and because Muddy doesn't come out, he's about three songs before he comes out.
Yeah,
and the band, I found out, you know, looking into it later, that it was Jerry Port and I playing harmonica, and Bob Margolin was on there. I think John Prymer might have been in the band, but we were sort of saying, it must be him on the guitar. No, I reckon it's him on the harmonica. I mean, you know who he was. All we knew was it was Muddy Waters was next to this song, and we liked it. We ought to go and check him out. And he came out like that, three songs like he did. He came out, and then it was obvious it was him. You know, this guy come out, and everyone cheered, and he got on the stool and played the set. So I got to see him twice, actually. I saw him then, and I think I saw him again about 1979 at the Rainbow in London.
You're so fortunate. I really, you know, I've never saw him play, and actually I'm in my house now looking, and I've got a painting of Muddy Waters on my wall in the room that I'm in now. He's my absolute favourite, and of course he's had all the best harmonica players play with him all the years, hasn't he? So it's kind of like that was the chair to get, wasn't it, to be Muddy Waters.
It's the best. Yeah. I mean, and every time I play with his son Mud Morgan, I feel like I've got the best chair, you know, the envy of every harmonica player. It's a wonderful job to have, you know.
Really
honoured and humbled to have it, you know. There's so many great harmonica players around, and to be honest, Mud never chose me. When he came to England, I was in the band that was picked to back him, so I was the first one he got. So I think that's how I ended up with the job. It was Big Joe Louis. I was playing with Big Joe Louis at the time, and it was his band that was booked to back him. It was all his band backed him. We had Pete Wingfield on piano, the only extra he wanted piano, so we got Pete in, and we did a few shows up in Peterborough when he came over, and he'd never been to England before, and he loved it. He just absolutely loved it. He couldn't believe that we all played like this over here. And because he's been back so many times, and he loves coming to England. And I'm the only one out of that original lineup that's still playing with him.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I've seen you play a good few times with him, so it's always great. And again, being such a big fan of Muddy Waters, to hear those songs, you know, kind of, you know, the versions of the songs that he does, as well as some of the new ones that he does now as well. It's great.
He does his own stuff, you know, as well. But those classic, you know, numbers that kind of played to death by everybody, but The reason they're played to death by everybody, they're great songs.
Well, exactly.
Really great songs, but to do them with that voice, full on powerful Chicago voice, which is so much like his dad, it's just wonderful, you know.
You know, all songs that a lot of old harmonica players, you know, know all solos, note for note. Do you generally play the songs like the original?
They've always got the flavour there. You know, I've never really learned anything note for note ever. I did a recording for someone who wanted a little Walter thing done. One thing you could guarantee for sure: the next night or the next session, if Walter did that song again, Walter would play something else. And for me, blues is a conversational thing. You're actually speaking through music, putting your point across. So to pinch somebody else's conversation is kind of weird, you know. It's not an orchestral piece. It's not a concerto. It's not written down. It's an improvised piece of music. But as we would say, like the meat and potatoes of a song has to be there. Like you couldn't play Hoochie Coochie Man and play stuff at a different riff.
Yeah,
you know, you couldn't. Yeah. It wouldn't be that. It needs that in it. But so
yeah, again, 40 days and 40 now, you've got to have that trill in there.
Yeah, exactly. You know. I don't know when. Oh, it's got that there and it's got that there. Okay, it's that kind of thing. And then I just try and remember them when we play the song that it goes a bit like this here. So it's never exactly the same, but it has the flavour of it.
Yeah. So when you're playing with Mudd, that you do the UK gigs usually, don't you? Because he also goes to Europe. Does he use a different?
I do. Yeah. No. I usually do the Europe things. He used to pick up a lot of bands, but now he tends to like to take us.
Yeah.
But if there was a show where they booked him, I'm sure that's his business. But if the band are going to book him, he's not exclusive to us. Last year we went to India. We played in Mumbai, didn't we? We went out there and played there for two nights. He chose to take us with him.
Who does he have playing with him in America? Obviously, he did the album with Kim Wilson, but he doesn't have Kim Wilson playing with
him. No, Harmonica Hines, I think, is the guy. He had different people in America playing along with him, I think.
Yeah, great. It's great to see, you know, I mean, I'm sure Muddy would be delighted to see his son, you know, be able to carry on and doing some of his songs and doing his own. So, yes, superb that he's doing that and still going strong.
But yeah, but getting back to, like, listen, I started getting into the feel-goods and listening to the more of the high-energy stuff, I discovered Jake Arles Band. I had friends that always helped. We always helped. You spent a lot of listening to records in people's houses back then, you know.
Yeah.
You went to your mate's house and you sat indoors and he said, look what I found, have a listen to this. And I've got friends I'm still friends with now in Southend that had all the stuff, they put me on to Paul Butterfield. I mean, I loved Paul Butterfield. When I was starting, I couldn't believe how he played.
Yeah,
really loved his style. All the early Piazza stuff, you know, when they had the Dirty Blues?
Yeah, the Dirty Blues Band, yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's called that, wasn't it?
Yeah, got that album, yeah.
They put me into all those guys, you know, these friends. And I met Mike Vernon, didn't I, in the early days? I think I was about 23 when I did a session for him. That's my first harmonica session ever, was for him.
Right, going back to your development and history, so you sort of started playing piano first, then you did start pick up harmonica 13, 14. So were you then more... Were you playing both as you sort of got to your...
When I'm saying I'm playing, these are playing at home, you know, for my own pleasure.
Okay.
It wasn't gigs. My first gigs would have been, I played in a Canvey band that was doing most, what you probably call early psychedelic stuff, all the Pink Floyd stuff. And
I
played a Vox Continental organ, single manual, with them, and then a little bit of harmonica towards the end with them, a band called the Rubies on Canada. That was my first gigs.
And so you were gigging first on piano, and then harmonica came up. So what age were you when you started gigging harmonica a little bit more seriously?
I wasn't serious. This wasn't actually serious. I wouldn't say I was particularly any good at it. It was, I've got to think, probably about 1920. And then when I was 21 or 22, I got the offer to play Red Inn and Hot Rods, another band from Canvey and Southend.
Mm-hmm.
They made an album with Al Cooper. Their last album was made with Al Cooper. He put a lot of keyboards on it. So they wanted keyboards on it when they went and did the live shows. And I lived on Canvey. They lived on Canvey, most of them. And so I got picked. I wasn't really qualified for the job, but they were good guys. And they said, oh, yeah. Steve, Dave Higgs, who sadly passed, he said, yeah, you come do it, you'd be great, you know.
You're learning on the job, that's the best way.
And we did American tours and European tours. Played a good few years with those guys.
On keyboard, was it?
Oh, all keyboard.
Was there a point then where you did switch off to harmonica and then...
Well, yeah, so it was that then the next band I played with, I got to join a band, and I never really had my own band until much later. I was always just part of somebody else's band.
Yeah.
Even though I was singing at some point, I was just a singer and a harmonica player really in the band. Mm-hmm. And I left it all completely and became a publican and worked for Einkoop, East Anglia, had my own pub.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, for a few years. And then I got an offer to play with this band called Rent Party, a local band. It was a jump jive band, really, play piano with them. He's a piano player. So
yeah.
I quit the job and played with them. It was a professional band and we toured.
Right, so that's when you became a professional musician. What sort of age were you then?
25, I think, probably 25. I'm thinking.
So have you been working as a professional musician since about then? Have you had other jobs?
On and off. I did that for a while. I went back to engineering for a few years and then got another band together. And it wasn't really until I met a guy called Mike Halls in London. I was playing with Paul and Smith in London on piano at the Station Tavern. And I met that was a regular spot up there. Oh, my band played out there, actually. Yeah, I had a band called Western and the West Tones.
Mm-hmm.
Just basically blues stuff, you know, playing harmonica and piano. I played both. Had that playing stage down. That band sort of drifted apart, I suppose, more than anything. And I met Mike Halls, and he was just another level of musician on guitar. I mean, he was really good, but we really hit it off. And we formed the Blues. Well, the Bluesonics was his name. He says, I think it should be called West Western's Bluesonics. Yeah, he kind of formed that name. I mean, the whole idea behind it. He said, who is it had Bluesology? Was not Saul Davis, the other guy, Alexis Corner, wasn't it? Alexis Corner's Bluesology. So that was the idea. He sort of thought Bluesonics was like the science of playing blues.
Yeah.
So, and he came up with West Western's Bluesonics. He said it'd be a great name for a band.
Thought of you being the sort of frontman, singer, harmonica player in that band.
In that particular band. And then after a couple of years, he moved to the States and he's still out there. And so I got various other guitarists and rhythm sections in along the way, you know.
So what year did that band form, the Bluesonics?
About 94.
94, right. Yes, they've been going for a good long time now.
Yeah, I think it's 94.
And has that then been your, more or less your single band, apart from when you guested with other bands?
Yeah. It's been my outfit, you know. It's been my thing, isn't it, to always have this four-piece, you know. I did for a while have West Western's Big Rhythm, which is another band, which was had saxophones in it. I don't know if you've heard any of those tracks. We did best part of a year, I guess. You know, mm-hmm. We used to play the 100 Club regularly.
Yeah.
And that was more doing jump jive stuff, really.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So we're baritone and tenor and a piano player.
But not you. Have you given up playing the piano at this stage?
I was never that good at it, to be honest. So I never really rated, you know, I was always kind of uncomfortable playing it. But
yeah.
I've played it on and off. You know, a few years back, did a, you know, Mike Vernon said he's getting something to back Lazy Lester up. And I says, well, what do you want me for then? I says, he plays the harmonica. He goes, no, I want you to play the piano. And it was about that Mike Vernon thing. I don't know if did we finish that? It was Rocky Sharp and the Replays. I did a B-side for them with Mike Vernon producing that. So I met him in a local studio.
Mm-hmm.
I just played the harmonica. And that was my first harmonica recording session I did.
Right.
You know, as a B-side for him. And we've kind of remained friends ever since, really. Did a couple more for him. He's a close friend of mine now, Mike. We've done quite a few stuff. He's produced quite a lot of records that I've been on.
Yeah. Then you got to the West Warwick, Westerns Blue Sonics, and that,
yeah,
that they said became your main band. And
yeah.
So you guested, obviously, with other bands in the meantime as well as a harp player, and just as a sideman harp player most of the time, then, is it?
Yeah. I don't really do much on the piano anymore.
Yeah.
You know.
Songwriting.
I've got a piano in the back room, and I use it if I get an inspiration to a song idea. I sit at the piano and go through it. Yeah.
So it was obviously talked about you playing with Morganfield. Another thing you've done recently with another band is Trick Bagging over in Sweden. How did that come about? That seems quite... I see your Facebook posts and you're saying you're off to Sweden at 5 o'clock in the morning, ridiculously early, and it's quite a commute. So how did that come about?
Well, I was invited. It's 10 years ago now, maybe 11 years ago, though. It's not recently. I've been with them a long time, you know.
Yeah.
It was back in the MySpace days when everyone had MySpace, and the first person to write to me was Tommy Leino from Finland, and he said, do you fancy coming over and doing some shows? And I thought, wow, that's just he'd seen some people have put some clips of me playing on YouTube, and it had sort of gone around, and he just said, love you to come over and do some shows.
So I
did some stuff with him, and within a few months more, Sweden wrote to me, Lars and Tommy Moberg, Lars Narsman from Trick Bag, said, would you want to come and play with us as a guest?
Yeah.
And so it seems like yesterday, but, you know, look at it, it's 11 years ago. And I went over and did the guest spot with them, as you know, they did a bit, and I sung a few songs in the meal together. They were doing regular guests, mostly from the States, but, you know, they chose me from the UK, but we got on really well. I mean, we really hit it off.
Yeah.
And their harmonica player, great harmonica player, he stopped, and they said, we need a harmonica player. And they just said, well, let's get Steve over. And that's how it's gone ever since.
Yeah. So when you go over there, how many shows do you do?
It varies. I mean, it can be one, it can be two. In the early days, we used to do tours of 9 or 10, but it's usually a couple. To make it worthwhile, it's usually at least two. But sometimes it's been only one. It's always an early start going over there, because it's a fair old way, really.
Yeah, you know, well, if you enjoy it and the opportunity to go,
you've got to play that evening, you know. I'm
pretty tired by the end of the night.
Yeah, I mean, but it's not hard work, is it?
But you enjoy it.
you don't
lug an amp and anything over there. You just use
just bag harmonicas and off I go.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, so yeah, great to be able to do that and go across. And then I think it is quite recent. You did release the West Street album.
It's with all the Scandinavian guys. So it's Tommy Lainio from Finland. It's Lars Narsson from Sweden. Mikko on drums from Sweden, and Jasko on bass.
We'll be right back. did you record that in Sweden?
I recorded it in Finland, in Tommy Leino's studio.
So you haven't done an album with Blue Sonics then?
No, I'm done with doing that.
Is that nothing? You're not planning to do that?
Nothing in the near future is planned for that. No. I enjoy playing live, and there's plenty of stuff live. I'm kind of a bit terrified playing, getting in the studio doing something. I'm a bit fussed, but I get away with things live, but doing it in the studio, I get a bit obsessed with making it. I know what I like, and I know what's good.
I've seen you play with the Blue Sonics many times at the Ain't Nothing But in London. Obviously, you got a regular gig there, and I think, you know, it just works so well live, doesn't it, in a way that you always get that more kind of, you know, you lose that spontaneity there in a studio.
Absolutely.
So, maybe it suits being live, that sort of music.
Yeah.
And just thinking about people who maybe starting out bands or just in an early stage of bands now, any particular advice to how they might have as long a career as you have, or maybe it's different these days, and to get going, any views on that?
I've been really lucky, so I never had a plan to play with all these people. When I look back, I've never been a pusher. I've never pushed myself in anything ever.
Yeah.
And it's kind of probably
going to happen, does it? Yeah.
It's gone against me probably. But I've always been invited.
Yeah.
Always. Never ever. I've never picked up the phone and say, "Can you give us a gig?" Ever done that? I'm just not in me to do it. And
but
I've they never,
knew who you, they knew who you were, though, so I guess you were out.
Yeah,
well,
I mean, I might ask a local to play a gig in some sort, and they say, "Oh, that's great. Do you want to come and play here?" You know, and people phone up and say, "Do you want to come and play here?" I mean, all that stuff. I've just been really, really lucky. I mean, all the Trip Bag stuff, the Tom Milano stuff, Mud Morganfield stuff. I did obviously the Roger Daltrey and Wilco stuff. I was always invited. You know, I was asked to do it. You know, I never pushed myself on anything. So, really can't give any advice because I never had a plan myself. I never aimed for this. I never went to jam sessions and got myself known at jams or anything like that, which I gather that might be a way to go, but I've never been.
Yeah, but you've done it from people know you from playing in other bands, I guess, and that kind of thing. Yeah,
I guess, you know, it word of mouth. It's
For the Blue Sonics, the question. I mean, you're the band leader for that. Yeah, you're the one who gets the gigs and next year musicians and all
that. Yeah,
What about that side, the business side of it? Any thoughts on that?
Once again, I mean, it's a real hard one because I'm a terrible businessman. I don't push anything. The phone rings. And I say, looking at the diet, yes, I can do it. So I've never been a promoter as such or pusher in anything. I'm not a managerial kind of person.
Well, again, it's your talent that's got you the corn call through to call you up. So yeah, I'm sure it's well deserved. You mentioned the Wilco Johnson thing here. We should definitely touch on that. I remember his what year was that now when that album came
2014.
Out? 2014. Was it that long ago already?
Well, it's really quick, isn't it?
I just remember, you know, the album was number one, wasn't it? And I was remember thinking, oh, it's great that there's a harmonica featuring strongly on an album which is at number one in the charts. That must have been a fantastic feeling as well to be there.
It was a great feeling.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never really looked into it, but I can't think there would be that many English bands number one with a harmonica on.
No.
I can't particularly think.
As a sort of blues album, you know, which obviously you've probably got some kind of more novelty poppy sort of harmonica on a few albums, but that, in that sort of album, yeah.
You know, the Silvers obviously had number one, being able to lead playing harmonica. Yes, that's one that comes to mind.
So you just got a call to join Wilco Johnson?
Well, yeah, I just got a call, you know, and say Wilco wants some heart, wants to do some harmonica on the album. He's doing with Daltrey, you know, in the studios there, and I drove down and did the album, did the tracks.
So did they know who you were? Did you know them at all?
Yeah, I know Wilco. Well, Wilco knew of me. Yes. Wilco knew of me.
Yeah, from again the Essex connection.
Yes, the Essex connection. Yeah,
And Essex blues connection.
He's seen me play many times in Southend. He's regularly at my shows. I do down the railway.
He's more.
If he's not playing himself, he's usually there.
Was that recorded in a few days? I understand.
No, a few hours.
A few hours.
For me, my bit was that they were doing all their bits. They'd been there for I think a week or so.
Yeah.
My bit was just one evening.
Brilliant. So, did you take your own amp down to that?
I took a little amp. Yeah, I got a Quilter amp that was actually belonged to Ronnie Boyson, who plays my Melbourne Fields in Depth, Copenhagen. It was his amp, and I still have that amp. It's mine now, but it's the only small amp I have. So I used that amp down there.
You went to Australia. Was it last year you went to Australia?
I went in this October, all the way through the first 2 weeks in November. Dan Sullivan, a just friend from Facebook, he just wrote me and says, love to get you out as a play.
Yeah.
I said, well, that's a long way to go. I don't know how you can make that pay. And he just said, we'll sort that out. Don't you worry. I'd love you to come over.
Yeah, great. And so you had a band. You played with a band over there.
I played with his band, Tomcat Playground, for most of them, other than one show when we travelled to Adelaide. We have another band up there, but mainly his band. And they're great. They're great musicians and great guys. And it was just great. I mean, it was just so lovely to play out there. And
how many shows did you do out there?
I think it was 10. Yeah, 10.
Yeah, about 10. Excellent. Yeah. And how's the blues scene in Australia then?
It's okay, pretty much like us. One was a festival that was busy, and a few shows really busy. A few, the midweek shows, a bit like midweek shows here. But it's a very similar thing to us. Yeah, to what we have in England, I would say.
Yeah, superb. Yeah.
And they're passionate about it. I love it. You know.
Yeah,
but really nice people. They're really, really. I was they're so friendly out there. I was. Recently, to a breath away, how great they were, you know. They were just wonderful.
We're going to move on now to see some of your interest in other harmonica music and some of your favourite players, some of your favourite albums.
And when I do play, still my absolute favourites, it's Little Walter or Sonny Boy. Yep. Put one most of the time. My record collection was a lot of Hammond groove stuff, a lot of Hammond organ groove. I love that as much as anything.
Talking about your sort of playing style and things, I mean, obviously you're foremost a blues player on harmonica. Obviously, like you say, you've had quite a lot of other influences and more of a sort of jive swing, jumping sort of style. But on harmonica, is it the mixture between the blues and the sort of jump jive sort of style that you play?
But any sort of roots is that thing. I mean, yeah, it's sort of electric harmonica, acoustic harmonica. It's all the same, maybe different gravy, isn't it? I mean, that's how I see it. It's all in the same bag. I can play traditional. I tend to go traditional, but there's some people I play with are more traditional, and I play more traditional that way, and I love all that stuff. My own band is quite a bit more contemporary, I guess. You know, we don't want too far away. When I play the Chromatic, my influences are, without a doubt, it's all the Hammond stuff I listen to. There's no question of it.
Right, so your Chromatic playing is quite based around the Hammond, is it?
Yeah, just the riffs and stuff that are in my head are usually Hammond riffs.
Right, that's interesting. And of course, you get that big sound on the chromatic, which is that kind of like those big long chords on the Hammond as well, isn't it?
It's a certain scale, isn't it? Often they call it a pentatonic scale, but you can play nice simple riffs on a chromatic, and it's a really groovy thing. Once you can make it swing, it's got to swing to sound really cool, you know, and deliver it. But I've written quite a lot of chromatic instrumentals, and they're always based around what I've influenced by my Hammond collection. You know, they're not copied. They're not copied from anything, but they're all inspired by it.
Yeah, it's always great to see. I think every diatonic player should definitely pick up the chromatic and at least learn the third position blues stuff, because you know it's not difficult once you know the third position stuff on the diatonic, is it?
That's all I do, is third position. I don't do anything else on the chromatic.
So you were learning the harmonica, any particular way you approached it? Was it the usual, you know, listen to your records and playing along and sort of picking it up that way?
Yeah, absolutely.
When
I started, there was no internet or very little instructions. People talking about instructional books, but unless someone gave you one, I wasn't the kind of guy going looking for one.
It's incredible now, isn't the difference? You know, the resources that people have now with the internet, just endless amounts of resources compared to, because when I was young and I started playing, I was the same. There was probably like two not very good books you could buy on the harmonica.
I've never had the patience for anything written down. I can't read music, and I just don't have the patience with it.
Obviously, you're a singer as well now, certainly, and playing the harmonica. Any particular, you know, views on that? Cause, obviously, you play as a sideman quite as well. You know, what is there any particular difference between just being the sideman or when you're a singer?
Yeah, I mean, it's by default, I just wanted to do some songs, so I decided to have a go at the singing. You know, I didn't see myself as a singer, but I thought I'd have a go at it, you know, like I'm sure many do as well.
So did you pick up singing later on then?
Yeah, I'm trying to think when I first started singing. I was singing and playing the harmonica. I would have been 23, I guess, 24. I do like fronting my own band. I do prefer being a sideman, if I'm honest with you.
Yeah, so that take the pressure off a little bit.
I just like playing the harmonica more than I like singing.
Yeah, but it's interesting because I think there's a lot of guys who play harmonica and girls who play harmonica, you know, they're maybe a bit reluctant to sing because they feel that they can't. So it's interesting hearing you say that, you know, you kind of wanted to, and you push yourself to do it. And obviously it's done great for you. And I think you're a good singer, you know, and it's a really big part of your show, your singing. You know, maybe encourage other people to say, that, you know, they should try the singing as well.
Yeah, I mean, there are great singers, but there's great singers that aren't great singers, for want of a better way. I mean, you know, I could often think, I mean, you get people even like, you know, one of the greatest songwriters in that time, Bob Dylan. He's not a great singer.
No, you know,
but when he sings his songs, it's the best version of his songs you're going to hear, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, he's honest about it, you know. And I do quite a lot of songwriting. I did. I've kind of slowed down late in the last years, but I like to do my own songs, you know. And I think that carries a lot, you know, when you're the singer and you're singing your own songs, that's your voice, that's your everything about you.
Yeah. The meaning's there, isn't it?
It always sounds great, you know.
Of the songs that you've written that I've probably heard you performing then?
Well, I mean, all of West Street is all original. Every single track on there is.
Oh, baby, oh, baby. Your dog keeps looking at me. Each time I move to get next to you, it just won't let me be.
But yeah, you know, since the internet, the songs I've written have been covered all over the globe. You know, people in Australia have recorded them.
Do you get royalties for that?
I wouldn't no. I'm not very good at that kind of thing. If they had a hit with it, I would think yes. But I mean, the level we're playing, I wouldn't think there's much money to be coming my way. If anybody copied one of my songs and had a number one hit with it, I'm sure obviously.
Yeah, if they made £10 million, you deserve a size for that for sure. So one question I'm going to ask each time on the podcast is, if you had 10 minutes. Just to play, to pick up the harmonica to play, what would you work on in that 10 minutes? And this is the view of, you know, you might play longer than 10 minutes if you start, but, you know, just to help people maybe starting out, you know, if you're going to play for 10 minutes, what would you work on?
Oh, for me, what, just as a warm-up exercise?
Yeah, yeah, whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
whatever.
If I play for just 10 minutes, it would be probably just before I play, I would just kind of get, I would work on Sonny Terry's stuff. I'd just do Sonny Terry's style of thing. It's a lot of really controlled breathing, getting those going, and it's just like an exercise that I use.
Really? Okay, it's interesting. Yeah, I don't really associate you too much with doing Sonny Terry style stuff when I've seen you play. I guess you do an acoustic one like that, do you, Miles Shells?
Yeah. I can. When we finish, I did some acoustic stuff. The harmonica, was it Hopping by the Sea?
Oh yeah, the one in February this year. I was going to come this year. Yeah. We had a fantastic event last year. They had this guy from Uruguay who was just amazing. But I was going to go this year, but they'd all sold out by the time I got round. I mean, well, I didn't leave it that late. And then, you know, those guys have done great.
But me and Will Wilder and Joe Fisco did a thing at the end, you know, and it was just improvised. And we did a couple of numbers, like a Sonny Boy Williamson thing, and then a Sonny Terry type of thing, you know. Down by the riverside, it came out great. When I listened back to it, it came out fine. They're good exercises. That Sonny Terry rhythm stuff is really good exercise to get doing your stretching before you do a run. If you're
it's a full lung workout, isn't it? Playing that.
Yeah, you know, stretching all your legs and everything before you start doing your bits. I guess I do that. I mean.
So teaching, you don't do any teaching, do I remember mentioning this to you a while ago?
I'm not very good at it. That's the long and the short of it. I'm really not very good at it. I can show people what I play in 10, 15 minutes. I'm done, you know. This is all I do this and I do that, and you can do this. And again, it's how I do it, not how other people do it. It might be right, might be wrong, but I can only show how I do it because nobody taught me. It's how I taught myself.
Yeah.
I can show you that in 10 minutes, but
I think you're right in many ways. I mean, I think having lessons obviously can be useful, but at the end of the day, you've kind of got to go and spend the time doing it yourself, haven't you, ultimately, to be able to get there.
Everything was secret when I started. It was totally, you know, you didn't know anything about tongue blocking, but all those techniques are available for everybody to know now. And I can explain how I do it and how I sort of tongue block and bend notes, tongue block, and how I do octaves and how I do the warbly things, and that's it. I've just told you everything already. That's it, really. That's the technique, you know.
Absolutely.
And playing it, putting it to music, that's down to you. You know, I can show you a riff. You can keep playing that riff for an hour. So how do you do that riff? I could give you an hour and you might not get it.
One thing which is really core, obviously, playing blues harmonica is tone. You know, and you get a great big tone yourself. Any particular, you know, thoughts on that or tips on that?
Well, tone block obviously makes the tone bigger. For me, it does. You know, I do play different from everybody else. See, there's this whole tight cup thing and everything and airtight. Oh, my, I mean, I don't do any of that. So I play with a really loose cup.
Yeah.
So I don't screw the microphone tight. Never. It's really loose. Loads of air around it.
Interesting. You get such a big sound.
It's a completely different thing. So it's a really, I can show you how I do it, but it doesn't mean it's right, because a lot of people do it a different way, don't they? You know.
Yeah, I think that, again, that's interesting that, you know, there isn't necessarily one way to do it, is there? Plenty lots of ways to skin a cat and all that, and it shows that you can get great sounds by doing things in different ways. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a big thing on the deep tone, you know, resonating in your diaphragm, or this big deep tone. But if you listen to a lot of Sonny Boy Williamson, a lot of that's a really nasty nasal tone.
Yeah,
you can hear it. It has a really bright front of mouth tone.
Yeah,
you get some, so it's really nasty. That's not a deep tone.
No, absolutely, and that's almost the beauty. It's the kind of beauty, isn't it? Kind of screeching, kind of quite.
Yeah, it's really
a nasty
sort of buzz sort of sound. You know, it's a.
Yeah.
So it's a tone, is the sound of it. So they say it's, that was it, big and fat and all these words that come out. But tone is something that's really pleasant to the ear to me.
Yeah.
If it sounds nice to the ear, it doesn't necessarily have to be big. It's
a
nice sound, just a nice sound. You know, it sounds nice.
Mm. So so let's move on to talking gear now. We can't talk about harmonicas without talking gear. So I remember a good few years ago, you were making your own custom marine bands. Are you still doing those?
No, I don't do them now. I still play them, and I service people that bought them off me in that day. I just can't get the bits anymore at a reasonable price to be able to sell them on.
Yeah.
So there's no money in it, you know, or unless I charged a fortune for them, and I didn't want to charge that.
Yeah, and I think harmonicas in the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, they've really come on a lot as
haven't
they?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the ones you buy stock now are a lot
better
than
that. Well, they're more or less what the customizers were doing. A custom harp is still going to be better than an off-the-shelf, there's no question of that.
Yeah.
But the off-the-shelves are so much better than they were.
But you certainly, you still do your own. You'll buy one, and then you'll emboss it and etc. to get it how you like it. Yeah. So are you playing marine bands?
At the moment, always marine band.
Any flavour of marine, as in the newer ones, or are you still playing the old?
The old riveted ones. But I do strip them down and then put the screws back in. But the crossovers are great. I mean, I've got a couple of crossovers that were given to me. So they're still a marine band.
So you'll play the old style marine bands where the combs will swell then?
Well, not if you customise them.
Or you coat them in beeswax?
The original ones, I used to beeswax, but now they're semi-coated anyway, aren't they? They're not a raw wood like they used to be.
Yeah.
They use a different wood now. I don't think they use pear wood anymore.
I think the crossovers are bamboo, aren't they?
Yeah, they're bamboo and it's silver.
Yeah, I like the crossovers myself. It's got a slightly brighter sound, and also like the combs being treated. Do you have a favourite key of a diatonic that you like?
B flats and A's, best.
B flats and A's,
that's
good. It gives you that that range, isn't it? The lower.
It's a tenor sound, isn't it? It's more like a tenor saxophone. Range, you know, not an alto and they're not a baritone.
Interesting. Right
in that
tenor
sort of range where it sounds nice, you know, especially B flat.
Yeah, interesting. I've done the other podcast I've done so far has been with Paul Lamb, and his favorite key was also B flat. So B flat is winning in the votes for favorite key so far. Do you play any different tunings at all? You don't do overblows or anything like that?
No, I can't do them.
Okay, and talking amp, so last time I saw you play, it was a few years ago when I did a support slot with you in Reading, if you remember that you were playing a Fender DeVille amp, then using?
No, I've still got it. No, a couple of years ago now, Dusty, best part of, I've got a marble amp from Holland.
Oh, yeah, those are custom-built ones, aren't they?
I play with Mud in Amsterdam, and the backline was supplied, and it was a marble amp for both two shows I did. And I was just really impressed with it. I just thought, this is a much better sound. I like this a lot. So I got one made. I sold my basement. I had a basement that I hadn't used for years. So I sold that and bought a marble and that's been my go-to. That's been my go-to. It's an incredibly well-made amp.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, no, I've never tried one of those. It'd be interesting to try one day. And you said earlier on you've got a small quilter amp. So do you have a small amp that you'll use for, when the occasion calls for a smaller amp? Is that your choice of a small amp?
I've used the quilter a few times in a life thing in a duo, but usually duos, I play acoustic. But the quilter is more just for recording sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes, I mean, there's 100 watts, that little amp. Sometimes if I do the railway or a show where you need a lot of power, I play two amps. I play the 410 and the quilter together.
Okay, you chain them together. Yeah.
Because, it's a major difference in power. I mean, it is much, much more. I mean, so much more than you think.
How do you actually do that?
I use an AB splitter pedal. But it's so much more than, I mean, it's only a little 8-inch speaker in the marble, but when you put it together with a 410, it's 160 watts you're chucking out then. But it's so much more than you think. You know, much more powerful.
Do you not get feedback problems?
No, certainly not. You get much less because you don't have to run them so loud.
So talking, talk mics. Is there any particular mics you like? I mean, I guess you've got
Over the years, I was always a Crystal fan. I love the sound of Crystals, but when they started letting me down, I couldn't trust them anymore. So I went over to the CMs and the CRs from Shure, and that's what I've been using ever since.
Right, yeah. I do have a Crystal I bought recently from Dennis Grunling in America, which cost me a lot of money. They're not cheap, but it is a good Crystal, and hopefully it'll last. But, like you said, the Crystals are maybe becoming less reliable, aren't they?
I spent thousands on them back in the day. I mean, getting good old ones, I knew exactly what you needed, and getting ones in the 40s, and you'd use them, and you think, this is so great, this mic. And then and I'd treat them like babies, and then you pick it up the next day, and it's dead.
Yeah.
What the hell happened here?
Yeah, that's not. And what about effects pedals? What do you have in your set?
I've always used a delay or a reverb, in the last 10 years, I would say I've pretty much exclusively used a Kinder anti-feedback pedal as well.
You got the Kinder, A lot of people seem to really like the Kinders, but they seem to be quite hard to get hold of now.
It's actually possible.
I tried to get a Kinder, and the guy didn't respond, so I ended up buying one of the Squeal Killer, which is good. This is good. It's hard to compare anti-feedback pedals. I guess if they work, they work, don't they? So generally you've got a delay, reverb, and just an anti-feedback pedal.
Okay.
Getting to the end now. Obviously, we're in this strange COVID-19 pandemic at the moment, and gigs are obviously all put on hold. So, have you got anything particularly lined up later in the year which you're hoping, or you're looking forward to getting back?
No, there are things in the book, but whether they happen or not, I mean, they're all. I'm pretty much assuming most things are off.
It's hard to say when it'll come. I mean, maybe by September, we'll have to get back out there.
I've picked up a harmonica for a month now, so not even picked one up. So I have to sort of think about going in that middle room and doing it. I've just been doing stuff around the house in the garden.
Yeah.
My wife had just here, and
she's got a fashion business, of course.
She's on hold as well, obviously. But she started doing scrubs for the NHS. They need volunteers to help make these things. So,
is she?
Not one up yet. So, she's doing some help out there.
Well, hopefully, look forward to when we do get back out. The gigs to the gig list that I run on the Harmonica UK website, that'd be good. So thanks a lot for spending the time and talking.
Hey, you're welcome. Thanks for the call.
It's a pleasure. I'll put a few links. So I'll link to your Facebook page. You have your own website, do you?
No.
So you got your Facebook page. You do it that way. Yeah. So that's all good. Yeah. So brilliant. Thanks a lot.
Great to talk to you. Thank you.
That's it for today, folks. Final word from my sponsor, the Lone Wolf Blues Company, providing some great effects pedals and microphones, all purpose-built for the harmonica. Be sure to check out their website.